This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Well, well, well. Your portal for up-to-date information on sexual health and well-being.
Sponsored by Thorn Harbour Health. Thornharbour.org.
Good evening and welcome to Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. You're with Renee and Claire tonight and we're talking about what rehab might look like for LGBTIQ folk.
They try to make me go to rehab and I said...
Yeah, better make a fully informed decision about my health and well-being.
Yes, welcome to another show with Renee and Claire. You'll have to deal with some pretty bad and good jokes. Some of our jokes are okay.
I think all of them are bad, bad, but good.
Dad jokes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But really, we've both been around people who've accessed this kind of care, and it's a topic that a lot of people feel like is a bit of a minefield.
Yeah, and I think there can be a lot of taboo surrounding it as well, like the image that people have around what rehab looks like or accessing a drug and alcohol service looks like and what you must be to fit the criteria to access that.
Yeah, and just like all of the stigma around drug use that still exists and the war on drugs, you know, so like as much as we all think that things are changing, and they are very slowly, people have a lot of stigma around people using drugs.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think it's important to note that friends, family and colleagues will be or can be involved in the process, and they sometimes don't have very much information on how to best support their loved ones.
Correct. So throughout the show tonight, we'll look at, you know, what is residential rehab? What other options available outside of a residential rehab? Barriers that queer people could face accessing services and participating in programs? What the assessment and referral process might be? Information for families, and including chosen families?
Yeah.
Inclusion criteria as well, and we'll also be talking to Craig, one of our volunteers at Thorn Harbour, who has a lived experience in the space too.
Yeah, cool. Because even just through the things that you listed there, Claire, for someone who doesn't work in that space, there's a lot of jargon and big words, and that can be quite intimidating for people to understand what all of those things mean. So we'll unpack those things later, but we will go over to a song, and we will be back shortly to talk with you about LGBTIQ people and rehab. You're with Renee and Claire here tonight, and we're talking about what rehab looks like for LGBTIQ folk.
Yeah, I thought that throughout this segment of the show, we could discuss residential rehabilitation.
Yes, residential rehabilitation, which is when someone goes away and stays somewhere.
Yeah, they can go away for a period of time, but it's not 1983 Ireland. You're not having an unwanted pregnancy.
Firstly, Claire, I mean, without sounding completely rude, what gives you the right to speak about this topic?
I'm not sure I've mentioned it on this show before, but I have worked in and out of the drug and alcohol recovery space for almost 10 years, mostly within public residential rehabilitation services. Mm-hmm. And since coming to Thorn Harbour, I'm working in a care and recovery position, which is short-term case management to help LGBTIQ people access services. And sometimes those services are rehabs, detoxes, and, you know, services that Thorn Harbour don't necessarily provide.
Awesome. Really great to have your insight for the show then, Claire. As I kind of touched on earlier, when we think of rehab, or when I think of rehab, I think it's like, oh, someone's going away, in air quotes, on holidays for a wee while. And so that's what residential rehab is, essentially. It's when someone goes away.
Yeah, so you go away to a place and you stay there for a time. It could be 6 weeks, it could be 6 months, it could be 12 months. I should probably preface this by saying that every service is different. They have different program lengths, different locations, different treatment models, different prices, different aftercare support, and they differ almost in every way imaginable. So there's lots of different options for people to choose from.
Okay, so because I only thought that there was such thing as that kind of rehab. There's also non-residential rehab, which we'll talk about later.
Yes.
Right. And that's news to me. So this is really already quite informative. Mm. So tell us a bit more about residential rehab, Doll.
So there's, in Australia, we have public and private residential treatment facilities. Private rehabs can be covered under your health insurance or paid for upfront. And there's little to no assessment process and therefore little to no wait times either. It can be quite expensive.
So that's the private one?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I can imagine that would be quite expensive.
They're run like businesses, I suppose. Like you pay for your program there. And the cost is dependent on the service. But because they operate as a private business, they can set their price accordingly. Mm. I have never worked in a private space, so I can't really talk about it too much. But based on the knowledge that I have, they mostly operate on a 12-step model. So if that's something that you're looking to link in with, that would be perfect for you. But they may not be religiously affiliated in any way. So, you know, this 12-step model comes from a religious background.
Oh.
However, it can be implemented in a service that has no religious affiliation.
Got you. And I don't know anything about private rehab, but I would assume that there's probably some people out there taking advantage of these kind of niches in the market, you know, LGBTI people who have a bit of cash around them who want to get rehabilitated and, yeah, who are probably making a pretty penny.
This is just my personal opinion, but I do feel a little bit skeptical sometimes. I think one of the very important things to mention is that these services may not be accredited in the same way that public services are. They aren't held to the same standards as public services are that receive funding from government.
Mm.
So, you know, sometimes they offer a money back guarantee, and I find that kind of language, you know, rate success of recovery, and that can be really problematic.
Mm.
And there's a lot of pressure for a person who may be entering a service to change, like they have that one opportunity.
Mm.
And that's, you know, recovery is a journey, and you don't get one shot, one opportunity. It's not an Eminem song. You know, success is only measurable to your own standards, not to anyone else's.
So, Claire, what's the alternative to private rehabs?
So, opposite to private, you've got public. So public services are accredited, and the organisations who run them are funded state and federally by the government.
Mm.
Because of this, there are longer wait times because there are no exorbitant costs associated. Usually the cost of these services is a portion of a person's Centrelink entitlement. There are assessment processes as well in relation to public rehabilitation services, and these protect the health and well-being of the person who wishes to access the service. And I think we should sort of go into that in a little bit more detail later.
Yeah.
The length of the stay in the public services is between, you know, 6 weeks to 18 months. They use a range of different therapeutic interventions that mostly focus on the behaviour, not the person. Mm-hmm. So what behaviours this person is exhibiting rather than the person themselves. Some of the public rehabs are referred to as therapeutic communities. So mm-hmm. It's a community that live together, they work together, they farm vegetables and tend to animals, and you know, they work and live together and, you know, change their behaviours through staying in this community.
Yeah, cute. This has all been really informative. Thank you, Claire. We're going to play some CSAs and come back to chat about what other options are available. Tonight, we are talking about rehab for LGBTIQ people. Tonight, myself and Claire are discussing rehabilitation options for LGBTIQ folk. Now, we've discussed public and private residential services, but what other options are there out there, Claire?
Quite a lot. Sometimes people are not able or comfortable to attend residential rehabilitation services for a long period of time. They might have a young family or work commitments or a mortgage, or there's a lot of reasons why someone wouldn't want to go to a residential service.
Yeah.
And it's not the only option. There are residential detoxes, so that's like a short 7 to 10 day stay, and it can include groups and all the elements of a rehab as well.
Mm-hmm.
There's non-residential detoxes where someone is linked in with a nurse and they have the outreach capacity to come to their home, take them to their doctor and help them to withdraw at home. There's support groups, therapeutic groups, there's counselling, there's dayhabs as well. So that's kind of like, the best way to describe it would maybe be like daytime rehab. So you go Monday to Friday from 9 to 3 and then you can go home in the evening and be with your family or partner or whoever.
Yeah. Okay. But wouldn't there be more chance of like people being triggered or relapsing, like being in your own environment rather than taking yourself away from it completely?
Yeah, but you're always going to have to come back to that environment as well. And
true.
Sometimes like a person could be concerned about their drinking on the weekends, or maybe they use meth every second week, you know, at a sauna or something like that, and that's starting to increase and they're becoming concerned about that and they want to kind of explore ways to reduce their use or control their use before it gets out of hand, or what might be out of hand for them.
Yeah.
So you can use a combination of these options, like a non-residential withdrawal nurse and counselling, to kind of help you change your substance use before you get to a point where you think you might need to go to a rehab.
Yeah. And can we talk a little bit about terminology? Because there's some terminology used within the queer community with regards to some forms of drug use. And people talk a lot about PNP.
Mm.
Can you tell us about PNP?
I could try, yes. So PNP, my understanding, is puff and play. So when people might have smoke meth and play with other men, you can also have chem sex as well, which is a similar thing.
So it's like code that people use online?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't checked my Grindr account in a while, but as far as I'm aware, yes.
yeah, cool. And so people have a choice in what they think works best for them with regards to rehab, yeah? So
yeah.
How would they know if they've never done it before?
Yeah, sometimes they don't. And I guess it's a similar process in finding a queer-affirming GP or a hairdresser who does sick fades. You just gotta try it out and see what happens.
Yeah, cool. So maybe if they see an advert or something, or speak to friends or family who have experienced services before, that's a good...
Yeah, definitely speaking to community. Everyone will know someone who has struggled at some point in their life with substance use. You know, Google is another really useful tool. It's important to note that it doesn't matter, like, if you don't know, there are people who can provide you with information so you don't have to get it right the first time either. Like, it's all trial and error. Maybe you will get it right the first time. You can link in with a counsellor and help explore what your options might be and help make an informed choice.
Mm.
Life is not a Sandra Bullock movie. People experience problematic use for various reasons, and it's usually as a coping strategy for unresolved mental health or trauma, and unpacking that takes a lot of time, you know, so it's really important to remember to be kind to yourself and allow yourself the time to figure out what's going to be the right option for you.
Yeah, look, and I think sometimes people forget that people don't just decide, oh, I'm going to start using alcohol, drugs, whatever, for no reason. There's usually an underlying thing there that has caused that, and to be compassionate.
Yeah, definitely.
And read the Sandra Bullock movie reference. So what you're saying is there's no magic pill or one size fits all. Like, you don't go in, come back out a movie star. Everyone's journey is different.
That's right, Renee. Mm. There's a lot of myths around drug use and recovery that kind of need to be debunked.
Mm.
And there's a lot of pressure, I think, that some people face that who want to change their substance use, that they only have one opportunity to do so.
There's that Eminem song again.
I keep coming back to it, doll. Mum's spaghetti.
Yeah, it's coming, doll. Well, thanks, Claire. This has been really insightful so far. We'll go to a song break, and after that we can talk about assessment, referral, and inclusion criteria.
Perfect.
Sweet.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Hello, this is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9, and this evening's show is about rehabilitation options for LGBTIQ people. I am joined in the studio by Claire, who is a care and recovery coordinator with Thorn Harbour Health, also my friend. Hi, doll.
Hello.
there's a lot of content being covered in this evening's show. Can you tell me how you can get the process started?
Of course. That's, I guess, the first step, isn't it? For anyone wishing to access private facilities or private rehabs, the process is pretty simple. You just give them a ring directly and they will arrange everything for you. They do everything in-house.
Yeah, because they're taking your money.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for the public services?
So it's a slightly different process for public services. And I'll talk about that a lot over the next few minutes. If you want to access a public service, so a detox, a rehab, non-residential withdrawal, counselling, day habs, like anything at all, or just want to get some information, you can contact DirectLine on 1-800-888-236. They complete an intake form and refer you to a service that can complete an assessment.
So what is an intake?
It's like where you talk to someone over the phone, they take demographic information. So they'll ask you your name, your age, your date of birth, the sex you were assigned at birth, your gender identity, sexual orientation, the type and amount of substances that you're using to gauge what will be the most appropriate service to complete a full assessment. For instance, if you know you are an LGBTIQ person, they should hopefully refer you to an LGBTIQ service to complete the assessment.
Such as Thorn Harbor Health.
Yeah.
Cool. So when you're completing the intake, you can ask for a queer service to complete your assessment?
Yes.
Or should someone already know that?
Both, but you can always ask. If you already know the place that you want to go, like if you have a friend that says, I went to this detox and it was amazing, you can ask for a referral to there.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Because before working at Thorn Harbor Health, I had no idea that that was how these services worked, where you could get specific LGBTI assistance. Mm. So that's really great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And once, you know, once you have been referred for an assessment, the assessment covers everything in more detail, and it's an opportunity to get more information about various services that might assist you and why, or answer any questions you have about specific services and what to do or how to access them. Mm. You know, withdrawal or detox can be quite dangerous depending on the substances. So having all of this information in an assessment for referral to the services will keep you safe and healthy. So although the process has a few extra steps in comparison to accessing a private avenue, there's method to the madness.
Cool. Are there any reasons that would prevent someone from accessing a service to assist with their substance use?
Yeah, there can be, and it's pretty complicated. But if there are any reasons why you wouldn't be suitable at that time for a service, whoever's assessing you or the organisation that you're being referred to would be able to explain it to you. For instance, if you want to access a day hab, which is where you go in during the day and then you go home in the evening, you must have stable accommodation to be able to give you the best chance at succeeding in the program. If you have a history of seizures, a detox attached to the hospital will be the safest option as opposed to a non-residential withdrawal facility, again, for your safety. And where this all sounds like gobbledygook, however, just to reassure you that once you're there, you get the assessment process started, things will be explained to you in the way that is specific to you and specific to your needs.
Yeah, cool. That's great to know that all of that's kind of taken into account. What if you're concerned about a lover, friend, parent, child? Can you start the process on their behalf?
It's a really tough one. I think we can all relate to how heartbreaking it is to see a loved one struggle. And if that's the case for you, you can also call DirectLine as well on 1-800-888-236. We might put that on our website and in the podcast information as well.
Yeah, brilliant.
And DirectLine can sort of provide you with some guidance and some services you know, that may be helpful for your loved one, but the change has to come from the person themselves. And maybe we can talk about how best to support friends, families and lovers and others later on in the show.
Yeah, I think that would be really great. I'm really interested to understand how friends, family and lovers can support and when the right time is to intervene. And yeah, we'll take a short break and we'll come back and chat with someone who has lived experience of accessing these services.
Yeah.
You're in the studio with Renee and Claire and our guest, Craig.
Hi, Craig.
How are you?
Good, thank you.
Thanks so much for coming in and speaking with us tonight, Craig. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey?
Like, I was bullied in primary school and high school, and I left school. I didn't enjoy school at all, and I left because I felt different. Mind you, I did find out years later down the track there I wasn't the only queer in the village at school, you know, which would have helped a lot. This is back in like early 80s. And so when I came out to my family, it wasn't really well supported at all.
How old were you when you came out, Craig?
I came out when I was 21, when I met my first boyfriend, so he was a lot more worldly than I. So that wasn't well supported. So I went off with my partner seeking validation, seeking, you know, wanting to be loved, etc. And quickly got involved in the recreational party scene, which once again gave me validation and a feeling like I'd found my tribe. Got quickly into speed and then stayed with that for a good 20 years.
Yeah.
And then when I was over in working overseas, I got introduced to ICE, to methamphetamine.
Mm-hmm.
From then, it was just gone out full bore, going hell for leather. It was only 8 months after starting to use ICE that I was diagnosed with HIV. And I was in Vietnam at the time, and there was like zero support for that. So I self-medicated. I dealt with the news of being positive by using more and more. So I came back to Australia with a raging methamphetamine addiction and acute depression. In 2010, there was 3 suicide attempts, and I was not in the right headspace to look for support. So for the next 5 years, I supported my habit by doing what I needed to do, a lot of things that I'm not proud of. Then in 2016, over Easter time, I was in my bedroom in a share house, and the chaos in my mind had materialized itself into the mess that was in the bedroom and my life had become. And so I'd picked up a flyer about Direct Line. I knew things couldn't keep going the way they were going. And so I rang Direct Line, and they gave me the number for an intake. And I rang them up. They called me back to get the ball rolling on going into a detox or something like that. I wasn't too sure what the options were.
So you were sort of guided by them in the process because you weren't sure what to do?
Exactly. And it's important that I had to be honest with myself. I had a problem, that life was chaotic, and if I kept going the way I was going, I'd end up in jail or dead.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't looking after my HIV as well. You know, one day would be 5 days, and I couldn't remember if I'd taken my pills.
Yeah.
Worried if I took my pills, they might affect my high. All that weird sort of thinking as well.
So, Craig, once you were linked in with a residential service, can you tell us a little bit about what it was like to go to rehab and change your life so dramatically?
Well, changing my life, as I've been 27 years of using substances, so I'd put a lot of energy and a lot of dedication into using. So I had to think about how much do I want a new life for myself, and how willing am I to be dedicated and put energy into that. And I decided that a long-term rehab, residential rehab, was what I needed. As I said, I put a lot of dedication into using. I need to put a lot of dedication into not using. So that was like 20 months of being in a program.
And what was the program like?
So the program's all about re-socializing, cognitive behavior therapy, or developing self-awareness. And so the self-awareness around, because I had my self-worth was, you know, in the basement at the time. My anxiety was in the penthouse.
Yeah.
You know, so I was developing strategies and realizing that I didn't even know I had anxiety until rehab. So it's all about residential therapeutic communities, like the one I went to, is the community supporting each other. Someone pointing out my behaviors and me looking in the mirror and saying, oh shit, goodness, I actually do that.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. And a behavior is just a behavior, and that can be changed, and that's why everyone's there. Yeah.
Precisely. I felt that I never had real connection out, you know, in the past. When you're in rehab, actually there's no agenda, you know, no one wants anything else for me but the best for me.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a really hard concept to actually fathom at the beginning.
That people just want to care for you.
Precisely. And that would, you know, I'd get overwhelmed and I'd be up, you know, in tears. It's just the thought that people wanted to care for me. And
As a queer person, what was your experience of accessing services? Did you feel like you were supported as a queer person?
There wasn't anything specifically for me being queer as a gay man. But the headspace I was in, I really didn't know what to look for. And so I just sort of took the guidance of more of the mainstream places. Now that I'm where I'm at, I'm happy to see that, like, there are places like Thorn Harbour Health or Drummond Street, things like that, that are there for the queer community.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, what's your involvement with Rewired?
So with Rewired 2.0 is a support group for men who have sex with men who wish to change their relationship with methamphetamine.
Yeah.
It runs fortnightly at Thorn Harbour Health.
Yeah, cool.
6:30.
Mm-hmm.
It's so it's me being able to support others while supporting myself.
Mm.
And it's not necessarily an abstinence program. There's no spiritual philosophies in it. It's about me taking charge of my own life and setting goals for a fortnight and actually doing things towards those, achieving those goals.
Yeah.
So, me taking charge of and being taking self-accountability for my choices that I make in life. And now I have a choice. Before, when I was in addiction, I felt I didn't have a choice, but now I have a choice whether whatever I want to do.
And are you involved in any other way, with the services that you've linked in with, or with, any other way that you're linked in with the community now, as opposed to when you were using recreationally in your early 20s and finding that kind of tribe?
I am. I linked in with Living Positive Victoria, giving back there. I'm part of the Positive Speakers Bureau, helping out at Midsummer. Before, I didn't have healthy connections in the LGBTI space, and now I'm rebuilding those.
Yeah, maybe one more question before we go. Did you see any similarities in the therapeutic community and queer community values?
For me, it was looking for the similarities and not the differences.
Mm.
We all bleed red. Some people might not understand being gay or that sort of thing, but they understand the
experience.
The emotions behind it. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll understand loneliness or isolation, you know, or not feeling fantastic about yourself. And they're things that we can all relate to. Being part of a community is essential as me for a human being to, to have that connection. I am who I am. We are who we are. And that should be glorified.
Yeah, human connection is really important to existing and living. Yeah, for sure. Well, it's been really great having you on the show, Craig. And thank you so much for opening up and sharing so much about yourself. And also just the work that you do within the community and giving back. Like, it's really admirable. So thank you. Tonight we've been chatting about rehab services for queer people, and in the last segment there we had the wonderful Craig on the show, who has done so much work in the community, and we really appreciate him coming on and giving us some time on the show. So thank you, Craig. Claire has also given us lots of really useful information about options for self-care, but I'm intrigued to know how friends, families and lovers can support people with substance use issues.
Thanks, Renee. What would you like to know?
I guess we could talk hypothetically.
Let's do that.
So, for example, if I have a good friend, maybe even a lover, or chosen family member, who's been using on and off for a long time recreationally, but it appears to be turning into problematic use that's interfering with their work life and their relationships. What can I do to support them if I've already had a conversation with them and told them about my concerns, but they have decided that they won't access any services themselves?
I guess this is a pretty common story, but there's nuances to each situation as well, and it's hard to know what to do. My suggestion would be to be open to the conversation if and when the time comes, but also support yourself as well.
So how do I support myself hypothetically?
Hypothetically, you can call Family Drug Help. They're a service that supports siblings, friends and family members of someone who could be struggling with substance use. Their phone number is 1300 660 068. You can also contact the AOD Family Program at Thorn Harbour Health on 9865 6700. And family, especially at Thorn Harbour, is a broad term. It's more about a concerned loved one rather than a biological family member, which is important for the community that we support.
Yeah, and AOD standing for alcohol and other drugs.
Yeah, sorry, I went into a bit of a terminology hole there.
Yeah. So these services are specifically to support people surrounding the person who need help.
Yeah. In some cases, they provide information to debunk myths, like all drug use leads to addiction. Sometimes we see people who are concerned about their loved one's use, and it could be that they maybe use recreational drugs once every couple of months, and as long as they're doing that safely and they have all the harm minimization strategies around them, then they may not need to go to a rehab or to counselling if they don't want to.
Yeah. And in extreme cases of someone, I don't know, say they've gone into psychosis or something like that, like, does someone still call the likes of Family Drug Helpline to get advice on how to deal with that?
Yeah, and I would also probably call your local hospital too to speak to the local CAT team if you're concerned about someone's risk to themselves or risk to someone else, any harm or anything like that.
Yeah.
Contacting the police, contacting your local hospital, or contacting Direct Line, because Family Drug Help may not be open 24 hours. I'm not quite sure, but we'll link all the phone numbers in the podcast and the times and things.
Yeah, so Direct Line seems to be the go-to.
It's the go-to, yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's the go-to for advice and support. It's kind of the central point for any drug and alcohol services, advice, referrals, support, anything like that. It's the go-to point that then filters out to the other services.
Brilliant. Cool. So this has all been really helpful. Thank you, Claire. Let's go to a song and then we can recap all of the content that we've talked about on tonight's show, because we have covered a lot.
A lot.
I feel definitely a lot more informed. So thank you.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. I'm Claire and I've been with Renee all evening.
Ooh, we've been together.
We've been together.
Not really.
No.
No.
No, that's a common misconception that people think we're in a relationship, which I think is kind of sweet because we are very close friends.
We do have good chemistry, but it's a non-romantic chemistry.
Yeah. Just for anyone wondering. We're both free and available.
Yeah. On tonight's show, we've been talking about rehab for LGBTIQ people, and I've certainly learned a lot. Thank you, Claire.
I'm glad. I think we've just kind of skimmed the surface a little bit, but there's a lot to cover.
It's a 101 for anyone who doesn't have any information about rehab or who wants to access information for friends or loved ones. So it's definitely been informative for me. Do you want to do a bit of a recap on what we've covered on the show tonight, Claire?
Yeah. I mean, at the beginning we spoke about private rehabs versus public rehabs, what kind of differences they have, what kind of similarities they have, treatment options that aren't necessarily residential, so maybe counselling or linking in with a nurse, an outreach nurse, or
day habs.
Yep, the rehab schools, which are a really good option for people who may have had a little bit of experience in a residential setting, but are now, you know, almost at a point where they're reaching their goals, but might just need a little bit of a kickstart or a reframe of the things that they've learned.
Mm.
The assessment process, and you know, that can kind of be, I guess, the most difficult part for anyone looking to access services or wanting to make a decision about the services that they might want to access, seeking information. What that number again, Direct Line, is 1-800-888-236 for anyone who would like more information on anything.
So Direct Line is the go-to number for
pretty much, yeah.
Alcohol and other drug related.
Yeah. The way that the funding works in Victoria is that is the central point where everyone has to go through.
Mm-hmm.
You can contact the service directly if you want to ask them questions, but they're always going to give you Direct Line's number or your local intake number. So if you just kind of want to skip that and get straight to it, you can just call Direct Line and they can help you from there. It used to work a little bit differently, but now this is the process that we have.
And for family who want to support, we talked a bit about that and some of the contact numbers there.
Yeah.
We will also put a list of all of those numbers with the podcast and on our website.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of information to take in, yeah. And there will be a central point where you can find all of that information.
Yeah. And something I wanted to raise just before we go is that there may be some queer people who could be concerned about sharing a room at any of these residential services. They may be concerned about how welcomed they might be in the service. They could be concerned about a whole number of things, how their hormone replacement therapy might be administered, lots and lots of different questions. If you have any, again, the best thing to do is to go through that intake process, ask to be referred to a queer affirming service to do your assessment, and then you can be linked in with someone who can help do that advocacy and vet those services on your behalf so that you don't have to do that while you're, you know, going through a struggling, a difficult time.
Because someone has already done that.
Yeah, mm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and that whole having to come out again in those services can be quite challenging for people. So
yeah. Mm. Yeah. And there could be services that may be more queer friendly than others. Mm-hmm. And that vetting process is kind of can kind of be done by staff rather than you.
Looking after the health and well-being of the LGBTI community. This is Well, Well, Well. Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.